So welcome everybody to Webinar Wednesday from Sight and Sound Technology. My name is Stuart Lawler, and this week, in a change to the regular format, my colleague Sam Colson from Hull is with us in place of Carl Brealey, who's on a well-earned week off. Sam, welcome to Webinar Wednesday. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Stuart. Hi, everyone.
So everybody's welcome. We had a break last week. Hope you are all staying safe and well. And today is the first of an occasional series we're going to do as part of a charity special. We're with our friends from Blind Veterans UK. I'm really interested to learn about blind veterans. I suppose over here in Ireland, we don't hear as much about the charity. So I'm certainly looking forward to learning lots over the next hour and a bit. Just before we introduce our friends from Blind Veterans, to let you know that if you'd like to interact with us today on the Zoom meeting platform, and we really hope that you do, by the way, you can get in touch by raising your hand by pressing Alt and Y on Windows, Command and Y if you're using a Mac, or on a mobile phone, if you're on the Zoom app, press the Raise Hand button, which is usually found inside the More Options area. If you'd like to chat and put a message in the chat, you can do so by pressing Alt and H on Windows, Command and H on the Mac, or on the mobile app, you can press the chat button. And if you are chatting, make sure you send your message to all panelists and attendees so that everybody in the room gets to see your message. Now, before we introduce our colleagues from Blind Veterans, just a quick reminder about next week's webinar Wednesday. And with a return to some sort of normal imminent, and with schools beginning to open up, we're going, in some respect, back to something we did a number of months ago, our very popular Open Forum technology surgery session. So next week, you set the agenda. Come along to Webinar Wednesday with your questions about anything to do with your technology, and we'll have a team of people from Sight and Sound Technology here on the panel to answer all your tech queries and fix all those technology woes. So that's next week, and information on how to register for that session will go out very shortly. But now, today, we're delighted to welcome Blind Veterans UK, who support ex-service men and women to rebuild their lives after service. I'm going to introduce each of the panel, Blind Veterans, and just ask them to say a little bit about what they do, and then we'll talk a bit about the organization. So starting with Helen Cowling. Helen, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm the Assistant Director for Operations for Blind Veterans UK.
Brilliant. Thanks, Helen. And we'll be going back to you in a sec to hear all about Blind Veterans UK. We have Paul Hartley. Hiya, Paul.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Paul Hartley. I am the Lead Rehabilitation Officer, ROVI, based at the Bryson Centre.
Brilliant. Thank you, Paul. Looking forward to hearing all about what you do. You're doing lots of stuff on the ground, I'm sure, lately. And Anna Wyatt. Anna, you're very welcome.
Oh, hi everyone. I'm the Corporate Partnerships Manager at Blind Veterans UK, working with companies to raise money to support the blind veterans that we help.
Crucially important role at the moment, I'd say, Anna, with a huge, huge change in how fundraising and all that sort of stuff works. So we'll definitely be talking about that. We will also be joined by Alan Locke shortly, and Alan is involved in fundraising as well within Blind Veterans. So we'll be coming back to Alan when he arrives to the session. So, Helen, I'm gonna start with you if that's okay, and maybe ask you to tell us first of all, just maybe a little bit about what Blind Veterans is, what you guys do, how long you've been around, etc.
Okay, thank you. So a little bit of background on the charity for those of you who may not have heard of us before, not sure what we do. Blind Veterans UK helps ex-service men and women from any generation rebuild their lives after sight loss. So since 1915, we've provided rehabilitation, training, practical advice, and emotional support to tens of thousands of blind veterans. We offer a really wide range of services for our veterans. We have two amazing rehabilitation centres, one up in Llandudno in North Wales and another one down in Brighton where Paul is from. Our centres offer care for our permanent residents that we have down in Brighton, a range of residential introductory training, rehab, themed weeks for our members to engage with, as well as critical respite and care for the most vulnerable. We also have a brilliant community-based service which provides rehab and support to veterans within their own homes and their own communities. Our community services offer local social groups, rehabilitation and assessment. And our staff work with our veterans to develop their own action plans, which highlight their own aspiration and goals, which they would like to work towards. And then we create a plan of how we can support them to get there. Our mission within Blind Veterans is that together we can help rebuild blind veterans' lives after sight loss, away from isolation and towards a life of fulfilment. So this mission feels even more relevant now in these difficult times than it ever has done, really, due to the global pandemic. So I guess if we're talking about the pandemic and wondering how it's affected us, of course, with a lot of other people from the sector, social services, local authorities, we had to pause in March and we had to really think about how we were going to support our members during the during lockdown and the restrictions that were placed on us by the UK government. So our centres in Brighton and Llandudno, they closed. Apart from still supporting and caring for our permanent residents down in Brighton. So they're close to all members. And so did our community services. So we took that moment to think about what we needed to do. And our focus was on our membership. So we felt we couldn't really adapt our services to meet member need without understanding fully how the restrictions were going to affect our membership. And we knew we needed to find out what the members needed so we could then design and deliver a service that would meet that need. So in light of that, we developed our temporary national support service, internally known as the NSS. As part of the NSS, there are phases that we are working our way through. So the first phase was to reach out to all of our members, to contact them, to make sure that they had everything that they needed as part of their day-to-day life. Particularly, we recognised that our members are of an average age of around 86 at the moment. So we knew really quickly that they would be in the most vulnerable bracket and would most likely need to be shielding, which of course means getting basic provisions was difficult. So we linked them in with local community groups who were providing doorstep provisions such as grocery shopping and medication. And we also worked with our fantastic volunteering team that we have scattered around the UK to deliver services to members that were completely vital at that time. So once we kind of moved through that phase one of delivery of services, and we continue to keep in contact with our members and make sure that we're aware of their changing needs, we then moved into the second stage of the National Support Service, which was really focused on how we could meet the needs of our members during lockdown, but also meet their existing needs. We had lots of members awaiting rehab. We had lots of members who were waiting to come to the centres. And actually, you know, they still needed that. They still needed that support. So how could we support them during the restrictions? So out of this phase two work fell a number of really exciting projects that we have going on that we are currently working through at the moment. So one is the Health, Wellbeing and Rehabilitation Project, which focuses on delivering rehabilitation to members remotely, predominantly utilising technology and trying innovative ways of working with members in order to support them with their rehabilitation needs. The other project that's fallen out of our phase two work of the National Support Service is our Operation Entertain. So this is us keeping our members connected and supporting one another in terms of peer support, because obviously this time has been completely isolating for some of our members, for which that was a problem anyway, and actually this has just exacerbated it. So we have our Operation Entertain, which looks at creating opportunities for social activities, as well as linking in with other members in the local area. And I guess the phase two element of our service isn't just that kind of basic provisionally us trying to support our members to thrive, not just survive through this time. So that's really our focus.
Helen. No, go on, work away.
Okay. We are currently working with the NHS on the evaluation of these projects, which is really exciting for us. We're trying new things, we're trying new methods of delivery, and we're working with the NHS to look at evaluating these and see whether they have the same impact as doing all of this stuff face to face, and see whether we can take any learning away from this phase of our project, really. And I know Paul will talk a little bit more about the health, wellbeing and rehab and remote delivery shortly. So we, of course, also have our eye on the future and the next steps. We've recently eased our services ever so slightly in the last month, with considering how we can support members out in the community and in centres. So this has involved easing some of our home visiting restrictions and planning for very small numbers of members to come back to our centres. And the members who we will be prioritising will be those who are in real need of critical respite and care, for which the pandemic has obviously been so impactful for them. They really do need that support and they do need that break. So we're really focused on being responsive and flexible, but really mindful, I guess, and trying to strike a balance of how vulnerable our members are. Not all of them, but a good majority of them. And actually, how do we keep them safe as well as delivering the support that they need? So that's really been our focus on planning for our next steps when it looks like we might be able to ease some of those services. So fantastic. Hopefully that gives you a bit of a background.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Helen, one of the things that I just wanted to maybe, just before we go to Paul, one of the things I'd like to just ask you, because I've been chatting to lots of charities over here, and one of the things people have been saying all through this is how suddenly everything was changing. You know, we were getting hour by hour, things were getting different, especially around that, you know, 11th, 12th, 13th of March time, when we were all being shut down very fast. Yeah. From an operations perspective, from where you sit, how was that experience? Because you're literally trying to remap a service in a very short amount of time.
It was interesting, probably professionally not an experience I have ever had before. It was certainly a lot of hard work in a very short space of time, but the principles that we have going through all of our services is that we try to be, and I believe we are, completely member-led. So the obvious answer for us was to ask our members, what do you need? What can we do to help you? And allow them to guide us in terms of delivering what it is that they require. So sometimes for some, sight loss isn't the most predominantly important thing. For it's housing or it's, you know, food or basic provisions. And it was just being really flexible within that. So it was, yeah, it was difficult. It was challenging. But actually, I think what's fallen out of it is some really positive learning for us to really evaluate how we work and whether there are things we could be doing differently, really.
Okay, fantastic. Helen, we will come back to you, I have no doubt, because I'm sure there will be plenty of questions. I'm sure they're stacking up already there. And a reminder that if you want to get involved, you can raise your hand by pressing Alt and Y. Sam is keeping a close eye on everybody's hands, and we will come back to Sam in a few minutes to see how the questions are. And you can chat by pressing Alt and H, or if you're on a Mac, of course, Command and H. And we do ask people, if you do have questions, please try and keep them brief. There's a lot of people in the session. We want to get through as many questions as we can. Now, Paul, I know you're heavily involved in, I suppose, the rehabilitation end, actually that day-to-day on-the-ground support for people, which is absolutely vital, but probably even more vital during a pandemic. How has your role changed and how have you had to adapt?
Firstly, Helen has just given a fantastic baseline of where we were and where we are right now. And I think probably where I want to sort of join in here is to sort of dig in a little bit about the experience of that change and how we adapted. I was struck with a thought, which is sometimes things are simple and yet not easy. And I think this is one of those things, is that what the service we were providing before the pandemic, we had such a really positive response to the way that we were working. That service was built through our members being at the centre. Of everything we did. And then we find the situation suddenly where my team was based in Brighton. Suddenly we were dispersed across, from my team, the south of the UK, but actually going back home, and then actually working with our community teams to support our members with supporting their basic needs right at a very sort of a baseline level very quickly, incredibly responsive, really listening to what our members needed and wanted. And that really started the foundation of us thinking about how we then develop the next part of our work. And for me, it was really about thinking, okay, we're providing this support now, but as we move through this, we know we're going to be in this for the long haul. And listening to what our members were telling us through our first stage of this work, our tier two work, just calling and making sure that people are okay, they've got their basic needs, we started to really build a structure of what people wanted and needed from us. And we also understood that what worked, the challenge was to really look at what worked and how we can then deliver that in a way that is sort of building bridges towards our members again, and being able to deliver the service that we knew that they really wanted and appreciated, but in a way that actually can be done through this pandemic, which has really led us into looking at how we moved from that first sort of phase of making sure that people were okay to actually really then starting to look at how we can deliver some kind of service that is meaningful, member-led, and actually helps our members to live the best version of their lives through a pandemic. So it's been an absolutely remarkable time, and I think that it's been sad and challenging and difficult. It's also created huge opportunities with us looking at perhaps a different way that we work, which, although that's our primary way of working now, looking at remote interventions from rehabilitation side, I really believe that we've got an opportunity here to develop services moving forward as we go back into some kind of new normal, and see how the remote delivery of what we do actually can integrate into the service delivery model that we already know worked really well before the pandemic.
How have your members responded to that change in service delivery? I mean, it all happens very quickly. There's not much time to consult with people because you're trying to do the best you can. How was that whole experience?
We've had an incredible response from our membership. Under the circumstances, it's been a sort of a frightening and uncertain time for all of us. And we've just had so much support for the support that we give to our members from our members. So there's been we've been sharing as much information with our members as possible through the publications that we send out to our members in various different formats about how our service is developing and changing, that we continue to deliver a service, that we may not be able to see people face to face, but we are going to find other ways of being able to get in there and help. And we've just had a really positive response from people. You know, as far as the training we deliver, we obviously have our introductory weeks that we provide for people in our centres, and also services that are run by communities. And so we deliver those kind of training, whether it's rehabilitation from a Roby side or IT training. And, you know, people have needed to wait quite a lot longer to get help and support that they needed from a sort of a more sort of rehab side, while we've been supporting people to ensure they've got all the things they safely need to make it through those first days of the pandemic. And people have been really responsive and supportive. We've really gone back in there again once we've found ourselves in the opportunity we're in now, which is actually looking at how we can deliver remote training to find out which one of our members feel they can get something from that. We've stayed in contact with people. People have not minded sitting on waiting lists for a while and waiting for interventions. People have been really understanding. People have given us advice about what they think we can do to support them. So our membership has been incredible through all of this. As I would also say, as our management team, in actually that we've been really been given the freedom to explore with our members how we can develop a service that's really meaningful through a time where it's been so difficult for so many to be able to reach out to the people they work with.
One of the things I've heard about chatting with lots of people over the last couple of months is this, for the people who need the service most, who don't have technology in their homes, and you hear about charities and families and friends trying to cobble together, you know, at very, very short notice, trying to find a solution that will help that person get connected. Did you guys find that, and you know, was that an issue for the people that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we needed to do really, once from the outset, obviously our first priority was making sure that people were safe, that they had the support systems in place. But actually through that process, we also began to identify and discover that people did have support at home, friends and family who were actually in their bubble, as it were. That was the kind of information we also took when we looked at how we were receiving referrals for potential help and support for people moving forward. Certainly one of the things that we did right from the beginning was that some of our members had some access to things like tablets with a, you know, adaptive technology on there, but we're really struggling to use that. So even within that, those early days, anybody we could help to get connected, we did the best we could do under the circumstances and use those experiences to really inform the national rollout of our service delivery model now. So yes, we had members who were struggling to stay in contact. So we identified what they had already. We talked to them about how we could support them and the best way we could do. We negotiated with the people that they live with and support them locally so we can support them from a distance. And I think it's another really another point of how we've looked at how we've been able to develop the strategies we are now utilising across our service to service the members that we can really work with remotely. So we've really been informed by some of the experiences that our members have shared with us. So we've had a member, for example, who had one of our members here, his wife had an iPad, was not particularly tech, but tech savvy, but had access to FaceTime. So one of my team was able to actually contact that particular member and work alongside his wife so they could actually get their synaptic tablet up and running. It was a bit of a quick fix, but it actually that experience has actually then informed the way we're now able to deliver some options to people. So I really think that what came out of all of that and from our members as well was just the sort of the continuing message, which was doing nothing really wasn't an option. You know, I think that where there was ever the opportunity for us to talk to people, to find out what their problems were and to try and find ideas of how we can interact and connect and get people and keep people connected, that was really, really feeding into what we're really doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's some amazing stories of how people have had to really be creative over the last couple of months and put in some really good ways. Paul, we will come back to you in a few minutes. I know there will be questions and I'm sure you will be called upon. And Alan is not with us yet, but I want to go to Anna for a sec to talk a little bit about this kind of one of the biggest challenges, I think, for charities in the last couple of months have just around finances and incomes and maybe sources of funding, Anna, that may have been very solid and secure at the start of January. Suddenly you're there at the end of March and you're very uncertain. How has that been for you?
Yeah, it's definitely been a tricky and challenging time, especially as I only joined in March, the week of lockdown, the charity. Okay. So for me, it's been doubly challenging, but you know, as the guys have already said, the organization has adapted incredibly well, and as someone coming new into the organization, I've seen that, you know, firsthand, and it's been brilliant. But yes, especially in my area in corporate fundraising, you know, we all hear on the news every day there's, you know, companies facing challenges, you know, people unfortunately facing redundancies. And so, you know, fundraising in general, but also corporate, is, you know, projected to be really down. I mean, there's research from the Institute of Fundraising that charities are reporting a projected loss of 48% of their voluntary income, which is absolutely huge. So it's really, yeah, hitting charities hard. But what we also are seeing are opportunities. So for example, we are, you know, looking at companies that are looking at, you know, returning to work or returning to, you know, what does it look like going forward? And we are looking at working with companies to help them to make that inclusive. And I think what this has shown is that companies can adapt quickly. And unfortunately, you know, before, companies weren't necessarily adapting as quickly as they could be to be inclusive, but they've shown now that they can be. So actually it's a really great opportunity to keep pushing that forward and keep pushing the message of inclusivity and companies really investing in that. So yeah, I'm, you know, my role now and what I'm focusing on is really wanting to talk to companies about that. And I think that that really opens up opportunities to help both the charity, but also the company as well.
I think as well as that, Anna, certainly I've seen and I've been chatting again to people over the last couple of months, and that maybe there are a lot of companies who are saying things like, we still want to stay in touch with you. We still want to support you. We may not be able to do it right now, but let's see how we can creatively collaborate. I'm sure you're getting lots of that as well.
Yes, definitely. And I think it's a time for, you know, sharing and collaborating And for us, like, you know, like we're doing now, discussing on a webinar and sharing our insights and sharing who we are as a charity, that's what we've been doing with companies. And we've been, for example, you know, the blind veterans that we support, the messages that they can share, the stories that they can share, and the like life lessons around, you know, resilience and adapting to change, and, you know, how to sort of cope in challenging times. We've been using that, those resources that we have, to actually go into companies and talk to them about that. And that's us sharing something with them, with then the hope that in the long run, that sort of builds up the relationship. So yeah, as you say, it's not necessarily about all about money right now as well. And we're looking more creatively. So for example, we needed some PPE equipment, so we sort of put the message out there, and, you know, really quickly the charity got the support that they needed, and you're seeing that across the board with lots of charities at the moment. So it's brilliant to see that different support coming from companies as well.
Fantastic, Anna, thank you. And I know we will come back to you as well. Just before we go over to Sam to see if we have any questions, we got an email from a gentleman called Jim Williams. He wasn't able to attend the session, but he writes to say that he's written two novels and he's donating 10% of the sales of these novels to Blind Veterans UK, which is fantastic. He's donating across all formats, paperback, Kindle and audio. The books are available now, and they're called Ghostly Witnesses and Fatal Revenge. Sounds like the kind of stuff I'd like to read, actually. And you can get more details on Jim's website, which is www.jimlwilliams.co.uk. Thank you, Jim, so much. I know those will be very much appreciated by our friends in Blind Veterans. Let's have a go over to Sam and see, Sam, have we any hands raised that we might like to bring a few people in here with questions at this point?
So it would seem that everybody's been a little bit they're holding back.
Okay.
So please do use the facilities, everyone. Oh, actually, as I said,
David Stevenson.
I've just prompted David to raise a hand.
So, and you know. And, you know, normally it just takes one person. So if you want to ask a question, it's always hardest being the first. I know I've been on lots of courses and there's this silence that they go around the room. But once you pass the first, it's easy. So maybe let's go to David for his question.
Right.
So David, you should be able to, once Sam unmutes you, you should be able to unmute yourself. And again, just to remind people, if you want to ask a question, Alt and Y to raise your hand or Alt and H to chat. Just a question in the chat from Suzanne, who says, I'm interested to know the membership of Blind Veterans UK. What's the membership, Helen?
Roughly? So it sits at the moment at just over 4,500 members. And we haven't seen a great reduction in terms of the pandemic, which is great. Obviously, it's not affected our members in that way. And we see a steady stream of members coming in, which is really positive, considering that some of the eye clinics and the normal routes for referral maybe haven't been functioning in the same way. So we have seen kind of a maintenance, really, in our membership numbers over the last few months, which is really great.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you very much. So let's go to David, if we can.
Yeah, well, after that build-up, Stuart, it would seem that I'm not able to allow David to speak.
One moment. Okay. Yeah. How did we? Let us just manage this minor technical glitch.
Yeah. Seamless, as always.
So again, if you want to ask a question, you can do so by raising your hand, Alt and Y, or you can type in the chat with Alt and H, or Command and H if you're using a Mac. And hopefully now we've set Sam
up.
You can unmute people. That was completely my fault. Major rookie technical error. You'd imagine we've been running these things long enough at this stage.
Even it happens to the best. Right. Okay. David, over to you. You are now.
All right, David, you might need to unmute yourself, sir.
Then we've got Nicola as well, lined up as well.
Fantastic. So we go to Nicola after David. So David, if you'd like to unmute yourself, you should be able to ask your question.
Thinking about it.
You might just need to, there might be a little pop-up that will ask you to unmute. Will we try Nicola while David is getting sorted, and we can always come back to David if we want?
Shall we move on to Nicola, shall we?
Yeah, if that's okay.
No problem. Okay, Nicola, hello.
Hi, Nicola.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, I'm very well, thank you.
Good to hear you.
Okay, the question I have, I'm not really sure, it's a very general question, really. It's just that with the pandemic, there's been so much loss of life and bereavement, particularly in the age group of the veterans, the sort of older section of the population. And I wondered whether you'd been in the position to sort of have any sort of counselling for people, because, you know, losing somebody for anybody is catastrophic. But very often people, you know, if you're a bit more vulnerable, if you're feeling vulnerable, and when you're relying on help and everything else, it can be the extra nail in the, well, I was going to say the extra nail in the coffin, but perhaps that's not quite the right analogy to use. I just wondered what support you had in place for sort of bereavement.
We do have, we used to have our own counselling service, but now we support members to access counselling services more locally. And we also have a grant giving function. So we're able to pay for veterans to be able to go through a period of counselling should they need it. It's also worthwhile saying, actually, it's been really difficult for our staff too, through this time. So again, we're supporting our staff and volunteers to be able to access some kind of talk and support and counselling services should they need it, because I think this sort of thing doesn't affect just one group of people. It seems to have just been across the board that people have really struggled, of course, with the difficulty of bereavement. So actually, just not just for our members, but for our staff too, it's been really, really challenging. So we absolutely want to support them in any way that they can. So I know of veterans that, we funded through grants a period of counselling to be able to support them. But also, losing a loved one, particularly if they live with you, if they care for you, if they help you with your sight loss, there needs to be quite an intensive piece of work that happens afterwards to make sure that you've got everything that you need to live independently too. So it's been a complex issue and a really great question around bereavement. It's very, very prominent and difficult.
And have they been able to attend the counselling sessions?
So we offer counselling, which is either remote, so you can have counselling over the phone. Obviously, it's preferable to be able to go in person, which is what we would usually do. We'd usually find them a local counsellor that they could access.
Yeah, but you can't do that in lockdown, can you?
No, so a lot of our counselling has been happening with our members over the phone.
Right, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your question, Nicola. Thanks, Helen, for answering that. Just had a quick check-in. Sam, is anybody else with their hands raised? I know David actually didn't mean to raise his hand. He just put a message in the chat. He said he was a mistake, so no problem at all. Anyone else wants a question? Again, also to raise your hand.
I was muted there, sorry. So no, David, David, I think mistakenly.
That's fine.
But we've got Alan from Blind Vets who has now joined us.
Ah, Alan's joined us. Okay,
He's dialed in on the phone, so he's with us when required.
Well, let's maybe bring Alan in then if we can, and then we'll go back to the hands in a sec, because I know Alan's going to talk a little bit about the fundraising piece. Alan, how are you?
I'm good. Apologies. I guess I failed the tech ability test. The link joining from Zoom.
You're here, and that's all that matters. Great to have you, and thank you very much. Alan, tell us a little bit about, I know you're heavily involved around the fundraising, and one of the things that for me was interesting to read about lately was where some charities, certainly over here in Ireland, were saying that actually people who are at home and who are still actually quite generous, trying to give what they can, maybe online or do things like that. Are you guys finding that too?
Yeah, I think I can. I could probably speak more to my particular area, but I think what we've definitely found for that point is that we've been very pleasantly surprised and, I guess, and humbled by the willingness of our supporter base to continue donating to us and supporting a lot of our campaigns, even though clearly it's perhaps an uncertain outlook for them economically. Obviously, we'll see how that goes in the remainder of the year. On the broader fundraising piece, I work principally with some of my colleagues, focus more on the commercial aspect and working with corporate partners, and that's proved a lot more challenging for obvious reasons. And often we're in the case where companies may notionally be in the position to help us, and indeed our existing sponsors have been very good, but clearly where companies who may have a real affinity with us may want to do something with us in the future, if they're having to make employees sadly redundant at this particular time, it's a very difficult ask to perhaps onboard onto a new charity. So yeah, so far I think it's been probably more resilient than we'd have expected, but it has been very dependent on the particular funding stream, and obviously we're sort of looking to see what's going to happen in the rest of the year. I know my colleague Anna is on as well. You could possibly sort of speak more to that as well if you wanted to follow up on that particular.
Perfect. Yeah. And then I suppose, Alan, in terms of your own role then and what you're doing, what changes have you seen since the start of the pandemic?
So speaking both as a blind veteran myself and a member of staff, for me it's been obviously I've got the same challenges as everyone else given lockdown and what that means to our day-to-day life, but obviously I've had the added challenges of my sight loss and trying to do my job around that. And in terms of the direct effect, my role was very much set up to commercialise the commercial operations of South, and what that boiled down to was selling memorabilia gift products that tied into our campaigns. So, for example, we launched a series of commemorative coins and things like that right at the beginning of the year. A lot of this was designed to be sold at point of sale, so physical sale. Clearly, that suddenly the shutters came down on that, and we had to very rapidly think, how can we, how can we work around that? So we put together a very sort of light touch sort of online store, which has proved pretty successful. But we also had to think about how do I seek to run campaigns and sell products to raise money for the charity when obviously we can't interface with anyone. We don't really have a big online presence, so we've had to be quite creative there. If I take one example, in the run-up to Christmas, obviously Christmas cards tend to be a reasonable way for most charities to raise money and awareness. We all set up to do that, frankly, selling via our volunteers out of the community. We obviously can't really do that now. So we've had to flip it the other way and set up the infrastructure to say, okay, we've set everything up so we can take orders online, via the phone, we can deliver these straight to recipients. But also what we'd like to do this year is say, well, actually, let's kind of make a, let's try and take, I'm not the positive for that is the wrong word, but let's try and make a bit of lemonade out of the lemons. And we'll say, well, we've got what we can offer to people who might have bought Christmas cards for their own uses. Can you fund us to send a Christmas card to each of our veterans? And then it has the sort of double effect of raising money for us, but also making sure that our veterans, many of whom, as I'm sure you've spoken about, in that vulnerable category and will have been physically and emotionally isolated, will be assured to get that around Christmas. So I guess in summary, we've just had to very rapidly reconfigure everything we do, obviously shift a lot of it online, and try wherever we possibly can to sell and do initiatives that are going to resonate with our members and supporter base, but just be practical to do as well, given the COVID environment.
Okay, thanks very much, Alan. I know we will come back to you. I'm just going to address a couple of the questions that are coming up in the chat, and thank you to people who are posting in the chat. Then we'll go back to Sam and look at the raised hands. I know there are a few people who still want to speak. So Raj has just emailed in with a kind of a upon the chat with a general question, and he says, please share your experience on use of technology. I guess maybe, Paul, that might be linking back to what you were saying about, for example, you were using an iPad with somebody who was helping with someone's wife who was helping her husband get the Synaptic tablet up and running. That's probably a good example.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great example. But I think that what's happened with regard to technology is it's actually kind of shifted a little bit in that there are so many of our members, but in general, people out there who've thought, how can I stay connected in this time when we were all sort of isolated and locked down right at the very beginning? So how technology has really kind of come into a fore for us, really, and how we've been creative around that is actually really, again, it's that same sort of idea, that simple but not easy thing, which is the simple thing is speaking to our members. What is it you need to do? What support have you got in place? What have you already got? So for some of our members may have had a smart speaker of some kind. So we've been looking at how we can work with that person to sort of upskill. We've been talking to people about what they already have, how they've been using that, and thinking about how we can adapt that to be able to enable people to get learning again. One of the things we've been looking at as we move forward is this remote service delivery. And my job and my continued job, but my job prior to lockdown was as the rehab and technology lead. So we are working on lots of creative projects, looking at how we can utilize technology to be part of the solution of keeping people connected. So anything from working with people who've already got established bits of kit at home, how to use things like on iOS, using things like Siri, introducing things that are already established. And then for some of our members, we're now beginning to look at how we can introduce some basic training where we can actually enable people to use other access software, whether it's something that's been added on or something that's already built in. I'm a real advocate for using sort of everyday technology and everyday accessibility. So one of the things we've been really creative about is actually working with our members to establish what bits of access technology is already built into their devices and how we can use those to get connected.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Paul. Question from Suzanne Beach. It's probably one for you, Helen, I think. She says, I've been looking at your website. Have you changed your five-year strategy? And if so, in what way, I guess, post-COVID, or have you had to change your strategy, I guess, around COVID is probably the question.
I would say that we haven't changed our strategy, but we have paused it. We are not sure how long we will be working in this way. But do you know what? There's quite a lot of stuff that's in our strategy, and particularly in our operational strategy for delivery of services to members, that the way we're working now has kind of sped up almost some of our strategic objectives that we've been working towards, particularly in operations. We've been looking at working in an integrated way, working with our centre colleagues so that we have one single member service, a single member journey, so to improve really member experience. And that, of course, happened for us overnight. Our teams became integrated because geography was no longer a barrier, and the use of technology around that. So we haven't changed our overall five-year strategy. I would say it's likely to be on pause just until we can work out actually how this is going to affect us long term. But certainly in the short term, it's kind of thrust us into some of the working practices, particularly within operations, that we've been aspiring to work towards for a little while now. So if anything, our strategy has become even more relevant rather than it needing to change, particularly because the needs of our members are still so prevalent, and meeting those needs is our priority, really. So in a very strange way, it sort of helped us move forward with our strategy rather than needing to change it.
Okay, fantastic. And probably another question actually for you, Helen, from Almadis Ahmed. What level of sight loss does someone have to have in order to become a member? And what is the age limit? I guess what's the earliest age maybe?
Paul, would you be able to answer that one for us?
Yeah, I think I could do. I've actually worked for blind veterans for about 20 years. So I'm just thinking about the age. That the youngest person I worked with was 15, who was a cadet, and the oldest was 113, who at the time was the oldest person living in the UK. So we have I've been very fortunate to work with them and continue to work with a wide range of people. That said, as Helen said earlier, our average age is sort of 86. But yeah, sadly, there are some people we work with who are very, very much younger than that. And the criteria wise, really, it's, you know, we're constantly reviewing that. Many years ago, it's quite fixed. It was what they call less than 360. So, the standard criteria around sort of being vision impaired and severely vision impaired. But we do also look at things like field loss and other issues around there as well. So we're really adaptive to looking at individual sight loss and how that impacts them specifically. So it sounds a bit broad, but yeah, we are obviously broadly looking at you need to have a diagnosis which is severe vision impairment or vision impairment, and then we will look at the impact of that sight loss and how that also works with somebody. And we're also obviously looking at preemptive stuff as well, as people's sight loss develops and progresses, what work we can do to help people along the way to adjust to that sight loss as well.
Fantastic, Paul. And this is another one for you, and then we'll go back to Sam with the raised hands. Last one on the chat for now from Joe Brady. How have you been doing rehabilitation such as kitchen skills? Have you been using things like FaceTime and Zoom? It was actually a very interesting question.
It's kind of a difficult one, isn't it? It's like, I have to say that we've only really just begun to look at some of our phase two work right now, and the challenges of things like teaching kitchen skills. What we're doing really with our remote service is when we receive a referral for somebody who is struggling in the kitchen, the first thing we do is we actually have a phone call, we have a conversation with somebody and find out how they're managing now. We're very concerned around the health and safety of our members and what we're able to do with those people. So when it comes to remote delivery, I certainly wouldn't say that we can deliver everything. So I wouldn't want to be delivering safe chopping and slicing or long cane training from a distance. Those things are just not viable. But there are, I think I'll come back to what I was saying earlier, which is doing nothing just doesn't feel like an option. So what we will do is if we have a referral for somebody who's struggling at home, we can have a conversation with them. We can find out what they're actually doing. We can talk about safe strategies. We can talk about contrast. We can provide the kind of tools that will enable somebody to do what they're already doing, but do it in a more informed way. I don't think it would be responsible to try and teach something to somebody where they may actually be at a greater risk. So in short, we are having conversations at the moment. We're doing what we can do to safely respond to people's inquiries. And we're also sort of holding that as well. So if there is a situation where we really feel that somebody needs some immediate help and support, we are also linking in with local services as well. Currently we're not interested in where we're going in and providing that kind of training, but if somebody's really struggling, then we our community teams are still being responsive locally and linking in with local services as and where is needed. As soon as we're able to and we're safely able to, we will be also providing kitchen skills to people, but mainly it's actually tips and advice at the moment.
Okay, and you know, I guess one of the key words there that you've mentioned a few times, and it certainly resonated with me, is safe. You know, you will do what is safe for the person and for your team and for everybody else. So it's a consultative process.
It is. Can you just come in? Go on, sorry.
Helen, do you want to come in with it?
Oh, that was me to just say, sorry. We do actually have a fundraising campaign at the moment called Veterans Kitchens, where our veterans are showcasing their skills in the kitchen, which are on our social media channels if anyone wants to check it out.
It sounds like the name of a YouTube channel, Anna. You should get it on YouTube.
It's in that style. So it's videos and they're showing how to boil an egg, how to make, you know, a cup of tea. So yeah, it's really fun. So yeah, check it out and have a look.
Okay, check out Veterans Kitchens. Okay, let's go back over to Sam and just see how we're getting on in terms of people who might have questions and would like to speak.
Yes, we have Raina, who is queued and ready to go. So I'll unmute you now.
Okay, Raina, so you just need to unmute yourself and then you can ask your question. Alt and H for anyone who wants to raise their hand. Command and H if you're on a Mac. Raise hand button if you're on an app. And if you want to chat, of course, Alt and Y. Command and Y. And if you're chatting, please make sure you send it to all panelists and attendees. And there's some great questions coming in the chat as well, for which we're very grateful. Raina, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you
how
hear
are
me?
You? Apologies. Yes, nice to have you.
So thank you. Really fantastic. Sorry, I'm just going to say that I've actually got a slipped disc at the moment. I'm quite a lot of pain, so I'm a little bit wobbly. But I just really wanted to ask this question or pose this question. I'm aware of the work of blind veterans, absolutely fantastic. I'm blind myself. I'm also currently national president at the Royal British Legion Scotland, and also so I'm aware of the work, you know, because they're connected. But also I have been disability equality trainer for decades, going back to the 80s. And this question is about volunteering strategies. Including volunteer fundraising. It seems to me that the beneficiary is always seen as, you know, obviously the beneficiary and the wonderful work that blind veterans do. And I'm aware of, you know, some really isolated people that, you know, the organization that's getting there is blind veterans. But there's so many, as I see, opportunity of potentially younger blind veterans, the blind community in general, who often have an issue with isolation, have an issue with lack of either social engagement or work experience engagement, who would absolutely, I think, respond to the projects that were encouraging these people to get together and actually come up with fundraising events, engage, potentially even in volunteering. From the disability equality point of view, charities do have a responsibility under the Equality Act 2010 to actually be proactive and inclusive around volunteers, not just paid employees or beneficiaries. And so, also I'm aware, obviously, access to work, blind or other disabled volunteers wouldn't have, you know, opportunity to apply for access to work. But the state has very much got schemes going, certainly slightly more familiar with them in Scotland, to pay for the support needs of disabled people, younger disabled people, but people of working age to do volunteering. So I'm just thinking in this particular climate, how about looking to the blind community, you know, ourselves, who have needs to be involved, get out there, but would need some support to arrange support via, you know, state schemes and things. To be able to do it safely and do it responsibly, because I think that there's nothing more reassuring and encouraging often than somebody else with, you know, the same lived experience, who've had experience of the things that you might be dealing with. So that's just, I wanted to raise that idea and
great
see
question.
If it's anyone's doing thinking about it.
I don't know, Helen or Alan, I guess either of you maybe might like to have a run at that.
Well, certainly with volunteering, certainly with volunteering, we encourage all applications from any walk of life. We have so many members who are also member volunteers, partners, family members, anybody who's got a vested interest in our cause. And I completely agree in terms of that shared experience. It's so powerful. And actually there's more remote support that's happening in our volunteering department, of course, at the moment. So there's a wider breadth of opportunities, I guess, to be supporting more and more members. So I would encourage anybody who knows of anyone who wants to be involved just to head over to our website if they're keen to get involved with volunteering. We absolutely cater to anyone who wants to get involved and make the reasonable adjustments and anything we can do to support them, to support our veterans. So yeah, very open to that, absolutely very open, and would encourage it. Alan, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Yeah, no, I think you covered it pretty much off there. But the only thing I'd add, obviously, as a sort of blind veteran myself, is in a weird way, as a silver lining, the fact that the current situation has sort of forced us to think about new ways of perhaps engaging people who are stuck at home anywhere in the country. In a way, it's almost made some of this a little bit easier. So I know, like a lot of charities, we've obviously said, okay, we can't do this particular physical event here. But we will do a sort of virtual event, whether that's a virtual kind of sporting event or, you know, hey, here's a way to fundraise or volunteer for us. And it has to be done remotely. And in a way, that potentially might open things up to other people who previously would have said, well, I'm a bit apprehensive about, say, someone who's blind trying to, you physically get somewhere to help at a centre or a fundraising event where I don't necessarily know anyone, and maybe this is a way we can get more people involved. Because again, from my own experience, I'm fortunate I've got my good lady who often give me a lift somewhere, but yeah, just even trying to get the bus service now, which has been completely reduced, I'm sort of forced to rely much more on working from home, as is everyone, and that's obviously that can extend to volunteers. So yeah, there's lots of opportunities there, and I think as Helen said, the charity I think would bend over backwards to do whatever it could to facilitate someone, veteran or non-veteran, to come and help us, support us in this way.
Great question, thanks Alan, and thanks Helen for your answers. I see a question coming in. Norman, you have your question on chat, and I will get to that in a minute, but we might just go back to Sam. I know there are hands raised for a while, people wanting to come in with questions. So Sam, if you want to, who's next in your little queue?
Yes, yeah, we've got David Stevenson this time. Hopefully, David's not lent on the keyboard as well.
I think David was trying to unmute the last time. So David, hopefully, I think we have you now.
Can you hear me now?
How are you, David? Great to have you.
I'm fine, Stuart. Yeah, a lot of people won't know that and I don't want to go back over old time, but the charity was originally known as St Dunstan's, and I think it's very important that the charity has now changed its name to Blind Veterans UK, because obviously at one time people thought it was just for older people and the charity just had money and how were they going to spend all the money? And there are a lot of people from all services, Army, Navy, RAF, whatever, who would benefit from the service. So one of the questions I've got is, have you got a leaflet that you can send out to people so that it can be put into talking newspapers or other magazines, whatever, to make people more aware? Because I'm sure that there are some people that are not aware. And obviously with the pandemic at the moment, obviously you're not able to run courses, but I know for a fact that there are a lot of events that have been run when things are back to normal, where naval sites, army sites, or whatever have taken veterans and got them to do different sporting activities and bring them all together to gain them confidence in various life again. And so that's basically. And how many regional centres have you got now?
Okay. Yep. So we've got our two rehab centres. So we've got the one down in Brighton and we've got the one up in Llandudno. In terms of the regional presence, we have five different regional teams made up of local support workers, rehabilitation officers. So although we might not have a physical centre in all parts of the country. We certainly have a physical presence in all parts of the country. So whether you're a veteran that lives in Cornwall or up in Leeds, you know, we've got a community team that will sit around those veterans, that will support them in their local community. And a lot of our veterans, because of their age, may not be able to travel to Brighton or Llandudno. So we completely recognise, and I guess that's what our community strategy was implemented for, was to be able to support members not only in their own homes but also in the centres, because actually we need a blend of those two things. So be rest assured, if you're a veteran and you live somewhere but you're not near Brighton or Llandudno, there are still services that can reach you.
And how does one apply if somebody knows of somebody, how does one apply to become eligible for the services?
So I would recommend you go straight to our website if you can access it. Equally, iClinics have a referral pathway. Local authority sensory teams have a referral pathway into the charity. So there's so many different ways that you can. We've got a phone number you can ring up, register your interest, and be able to be sent some forms or accessible forms in different versions if required. So there's a whole host of different ways that you can interact and get in touch with us. And if you ring our central phone number, even if you've just got some questions about it, you're not sure whether you'd be eligible, or you're not sure whether the person you know would be eligible, actually we can talk you through the process and be able to give you the information you need to be able to make that decision whether you want to become a blind veteran and you want to apply. So we're trying to make it as accessible as possible in any way that that you want to be able to interact with us, really. So I would recommend, as a first point of call, our website would be a really good place to look at our membership criteria, but also to get some of our contact details.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, David, for your question. So just before we go back to Sam, I'm going to read something that came in on the chat from Norman Ogden. Alan, probably one for you or for Anna, and maybe you'd both like to take a stab. And he says, I wonder whether, since the pandemic, we need a different model of charity fundraising. What is the proportion of people who would donate to any charity? The tendency is always to ask for money from the same existing donors, tried and tested. But now a large amount of people are suffering from economic shock. Do we not need to protect the voluntary sector environment? So I suppose it's an interesting take on, I guess, how fundraising is done and maybe how fundraising might change in the future, Alan.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question. And as I alluded to earlier, I think it's one we're really cognizant of. I'm just responsible for a part of our overall fundraising. It's, you can imagine there's certain channels which have really sort of dropped off the cliff, and others which have so far held up quite well, but it appears we're at the very least going to enter a period of some sort of downturn at the very least. And that's obviously going to impact on people's ability to give. So I think it's how we can perhaps adapt to doing that. And if I've answered the question correctly, obviously there's a voluntary aspect to that. So there's people perhaps can't give money, but actually if they give time through volunteering, that in itself allows us to focus our remaining resources in a better way, which is terrific. And again, speaking as a veteran, whilst I'm very grateful to the, you know, receiving things like a liquid level indicator and the technology, often it's just as, if not more, valuable to have you to be able to speak to someone, but that's a volunteer or a counsellor. And certainly, when I first came out of the Navy, that sort of emotional support was terrific. I think the other element of fundraising, how it may change, is as the times change, we've got to change. And it may be, if you take the example of charity shops. Obviously, for some charities, not us, that's a huge revenue channel, which is going to be very challenging to do. But actually, you know, the country has just probably had its biggest ever spring clean. Lots of people perhaps prepared to put a lot of, who would have taken things to a charity shop, can we now ask them to sell that on eBay on our behalf and send us the revenue? So in a way, we achieve the same result, and it doesn't cost the individual money in terms of dipping into their paycheck or savings, but it does mean they can support us perhaps in a slightly different way, and we can obviously still gain the benefit from that. So yeah, I think it's between ourselves and volunteers, just seeing how we can be very flexible and adapt to the circumstances, and hopefully we can kind of ride it out together.
Yeah, hugely changing times, and of course it's so hard to know where anything might sit in you know, 3 months from now. Interesting to have this conversation again at that time. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks Alan for that, and thank you Norman for putting in the question. We're going to go back to Sam because there may be some more hands raised.
Yeah, thanks Stuart. So we've got a regular webinar Wednesday attendee, Edward Bates is ready. So I'll allow you to talk, Edward.
Friend of the show, as they say.
Yeah.
So
absolutely a veteran himself.
Unmute yourself. A veteran, yeah, a veteran of Webinar Wednesday.
Hi everybody, can you hear me?
We can indeed. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks, Sam and Stuart. How are you both? All right?
We're absolutely fine, thank God.
Thanks.
The sun is shining.
Thanks for this webinar. It's a really interesting one. I've enjoyed hearing about it, and I know a fair bit about it from the work I do. But the question I've had is we've all found this time very strange, whether you're blind or sighted or not. But I wondered if any of the panelists, when they've spoken to any of the veterans, like if you think about it, when there was conflict, for example, the emphasis, if you like, was to sort of be together, live together 24/7 kind of thing. You didn't really have a break from each other. Now with COVID times, we're being told to sort of stay away if we live on our own or whatever. It can be very isolating. I know that one of the panelists has spoken about counselling already, but I'd just be interested to really know, have any of the panel heard about how any of the ex-servicemen and women are feeling during this time? How do they feel about moving forward? And do they feel anxious about the times we're living in?
Great question. Anyone like to? Helen, maybe?
Yeah, I would say that social isolation in all forms was a big problem for our veterans anyway, and is actually a wider issue with elderly people as a whole. And I actually think that this has been a very difficult time for veterans living in isolation, particularly when you don't have any caring support or you don't have any family that are close by, particularly if you're shielding. So it has been a really difficult time, and it's something that we've been trying to support veterans with over the last few years, really, and particularly as part of our community model. We have many social groups that run locally, and that's actually that shared experience of sight loss, that shared experience of service for our veterans is so, so important, which is why, you know, some of the introductory weeks we run at centres are life-changing, really, because it's actually veterans talking to veterans about their experience and what they've gone through. So if you take away that layer of interaction, it's not just about, you know, not being able to get your shopping, it's not just about not having someone to pop in, it's actually that peer support that is so important for our members. So that in the absence of being able to go to the centre, and in the absence of being able to go to the local lunch club or IT club or whatever it is that they tend to engage with, it's been so important to be able to connect them remotely. And we've got lots and lots of member volunteers who are running social groups virtually. We've got book clubs, we've got choirs, we've got a football club. So people with shared interests getting together, not just locally, but also nationally, to be able to talk about kind of common ground, but also to talk about their experiences. Normally you start talking about a book or an experience, which is what you're there to talk about, but actually then the conversation quickly goes to how they've coped. So actually being able to create those opportunities for sharing has been really, really important. And that's why one of our strands that we're focusing on is our Operation Entertain in Ops, to be able to create space for veterans to get together and actually remain connected in the absence of all of that other social stuff that we usually do.
Can I add something to that as well, if that's okay? I'm just thinking about the Operation Entertain is back in when Operation Entertain first came on board, it actually swished into something called Operation VE Day, and it was actually our first opportunity to use technology teams to actually bring our members together. And we actually held virtual tables. We were going to have a big VE Day celebration, or not celebration, maybe, but a commemorative day. And actually what happened was we actually had this incredibly successful day that we did using Teams online and bringing our members together. I was fortunately part of one of those groups back in May. And that was actually our first opportunity to see how bringing people, our members together through telephone calls or other ways of being accessing people, that actually the importance of that closeness and bringing people together for those conversations. So our VE Day experience really helped us inform how we've begun to develop our Operation Entertain, which links into other services that we're providing around group training, other opportunities we're going to bring out of that as well. So, I think back to our principles and our 5-year plan, and how the circumstances we found ourselves in has really pushed us to push technology in order for us to continue to serve our members in the way they want.
Yeah, thanks, Val. That was very interesting. Appreciate that.
Thanks for the question, Edward, and thanks Helen and Paul for answering that one. Let's go back to Sam and see if we have anybody else.
No, we're clear with the raising of the hands.
Okay.
Yeah, for now.
All right. So I suppose I'm very conscious of the time our panelists have given today. Let's just maybe, Helen, I'm sure at this time, you guys would like people to get in touch. I'm sure you're always looking for fundraising ideas and for people to be able to contact you. How can people get in touch with Blind Veterans, and if they'd like to perhaps either find out more about your services or they'd like to help you in some way?
I would always direct people to our website. It's got information there about how you can become a member, how you can volunteer with us, how you can become a supporter. So loads of different avenues that you can engage with us as an organisation, whether you're visually impaired yourself or you just want to support the cause. It's also got some really great, powerful stories on there about the members we support and what impact we've had on their lives. So really, I would encourage everyone to get a really good feel about the organisation, to go and have a look. But I know if it's particularly about this call today, Anna, you were going to offer your email address, I think, if anyone had any further questions or anything they wanted to talk about.
This was more specifically about something that we offer that might be of interest to people. Before the pandemic happened, we actually had created our visual impairment online training, and has become more relevant than ever before now, particularly that it was online, because before we used to deliver face-to-face, but now we have this training that we can offer to organisations to help people to understand, you know, what is a visual impairment, you know, how they can support people who have a visual impairment, whether that's in the workplace, just general day-to-day life, you know, the supermarket, in the train, you know, in a train station, what is it that you can do to help? So that's something that we can offer. So yeah, if anyone's interested in that and getting in touch to find out more about more information, the prices and how that can help your organisation, then yeah, please do get in touch with me.
Great. And what's your email address then, Anna, if people want to get in touch?
Oh, is there a way of sending it out afterwards? Is that easy to...
Actually, yeah, we can stick it in the... We'll put it out too. So anybody who registered for this session will get a follow-up email, and yeah, we'll make sure that it gets put out. Okay, fantastic. So I want to thank our colleagues from Blind Veterans, Anna, Helen, Alan and Paul, sincerely, for your time this afternoon. I've learned loads about the organization, and you know, it sounds like whilst we're in the midst of lots of change, you guys are doing some incredible things and have responded to it, I suppose, so quickly and so well. So again, congratulations, and we wish you all the very best for the future. And thank you for taking the time to chat to us today on our Webinar Wednesday charity special. That's just about it for this week. Thank you to everybody for your questions and engagement during the session today. Remember, we're back next Wednesday at 2 o'clock with our tech surgery. Any technical problems or questions or queries you have, please bring them with you. And we'll also be talking about back to school and back to heading out. How can you look after yourself and your technology? We're looking forward to an engaging session. Until that though, from Stuart and Sam, and of course, many thanks to Sam for so ably managing our Q&A and hands and everything else. Many thanks, and speak to you all soon. Bye-bye.